It's time to turn to the WUKY Sports page with your host, Keith Elkins, revealing conversations and stories you thought you knew from prominent Kentucky sports figures. Now, here once again is Keith Elkins.
Robbie Moss is with us today. He's from Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and played for the Kentucky Wildcats back in 2003 through 2006 under Coach Tubby Smith, and eventually moved into a starting role, even though he was a walk-on all 4 years at Kentucky, and became a very popular Wildcat and played on some excellent Kentucky teams, and now is doing some broadcasting work himself, and we'll talk to him a little bit about that as well. But Robbie, it's good to have you with us.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate you having me on.
Tell me about what's going on for you now. I know you're doing some broadcast work, mm-hmm. but since college, what has life been like for Robbie Moss?
It's work, man. I had a son right out of school. Mm-hmm. So Braylon is 18 now. He goes to Kentucky Wesleyan, plays red shirt there, playing football there. And then I have a six-year-old son. And for work, I'm in sales. I'm in pharmaceuticals. So, mm-hmm. yeah, do pharmaceutical sales.
Yeah. So busy and family life and all of that.
All the above. Yeah,
and still involved in basketball, too.
And still love basketball. Yeah. So, yeah, doing a little
Did you consider coaching at any point?
You know, I thought I would be a coach. I honestly figured I would go overseas and play and then come back and be a coach. But life happens. So, you know, thought about it. But now, I don't know. It's kind of too late for me to coach at this point, I think. Maybe not too late, but I got a lot of other stuff going on now.
Well, that's a whole different lifestyle in itself, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Wanted to ask you about your background in Hopkinsville growing up there. You mm-hmm. said you were born in Greenville but moved to Hopkinsville at a very early age, third grade.
Yeah, third grade.
And so what about the interest in sports? Is this a lifelong thing, or did you just sort of get drafted into it? Coaches encourage you, or what happened there?
I think coming from Hoptown in Western Kentucky, sports are like woven into the fabric of who you are. It's mm-hmm. it's such a big deal to play sports. And coming from Hoptown, we've had so many guys that have been studs out of that small town. I was just talking to Mike Scott about it the other day. He's from Baltimore, and he played at Eastern Kentucky. He's got Hoop Dreams, which is a workout facility, and he was just talking about all the players that we were able to produce out of little old Hoptown. Mm-hmm. And I think down there, it's all you had to do. I mean, we didn't have a lot of stuff going on, so you just played basketball, you played football, you did it all day, you played outside all day, found a gym, and then once you got to high school, you just continued to develop your craft and work at it. So basketball was what I picked, and I mean, I love it. I just enjoyed playing it, and we were just – I went to University Heights Academy, mm-hmm. and it's a close-knit, you know, community, just a brotherhood, and we always looked out for each other. We always wanted the best, and we always worked to help each other. So I had a big brother in Greg Buckner who played at Clemson and then went on to play, I don't know, 12, 13 years, 14 years in the NBA, and he kind of took us all underneath him, and Isaiah Victor, Lamont Barnes, Harold Swanigan, all those guys that went on and played at Temple and Tennessee and Notre Dame, all those guys, he took care of us. We'd get together in summertime and do workouts and travel around and do basketball camps. So it was it's always been – basketball's just been a part of my life.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about influences, but with those guys around, people like that who are elite athletes, mm-hmm. Those are influences right there. Anybody else, any coaches or anybody stand out?
Oh, man, I've been so fortunate to have great coaches. So I had Hall of Fame coaches at every level. My high school coach was Jeff Jackson, who's in Lincoln County now, doing a great job. Heck, he was just in the Final Four. 2 or 3 years ago with Lincoln County and in the Kentucky High School Basketball Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. and deservedly so because he's won a bunch of games and understood the game. And then I got Tubby Smith when I got here, another Hall of Fame coach who knew so much about basketball, taught me so much, really, really learned how to digest film and understand and break down film and plays and stuff from him. So my basketball knowledge, I've just been so fortunate to be around so many great minds forever. So they've helped shape my game and helped me to make an impact when I was able to play.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned attending University Heights, and that is a little bit different situation. For those not familiar with University Heights Academy, tell me mm-hmm. a little bit about it.
Well, it's a private school, and it's pre through 12, so it's so wild. We'll have a pep rally, and before our pep rally, we're walking through, you know, first graders and second graders giving fives. You know, not something you usually do in high school. So it's a really, really close family setting. And again, it's just a program where Coach Jackson just taught us the tradition and understanding, you know, the importance of putting on that jersey and all the guys that came before us. And then just the importance of representing yourself and understanding how to play the game the right way. So it's an experience that not a lot of people will be able to get. It's a very, very special private school.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I first heard of University Heights when they were coming on the scene in basketball, they won a state championship.
They won a state
right?
championship back in 92. Yeah.
92, yeah, okay. I mean, it was early 90s, and a couple of the guys that you mentioned, Isaiah Victor was part of that team, wasn't he? And so it was but a very small enrollment, at least at that time. Is it
still tiny. I mean, I graduated with like 29 people, I think, 29 people in my class. So, it's a very, very small school.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, did you played against the public school there, I guess, against Christian County?
Christian County and Hopkinsville were in our district, so we always played them. Now they actually play them, I think they play them twice a year, and then they'll play them in district. Back then, we only played them in district. Like, they didn't play regular season against us, so we missed out on the regular season matchups. We only got to play them in tournament time.
I'm guessing that involved a rematch of guys that you played against when you were playing all day as kids. You all knew each other, and by the time you got to high school, you knew who you were going up against.
There was all the junior pro days and the middle school days. They were all the same. They're all either Christian County or Hopkinsville High School. So they're actually merging those two high schools now. In Christian County, so it should be. I mean, you would think we would be loaded down there. I guess things have just kind of changed talent-wise down there, and it's not as deep as it used to be.
Yeah. It's funny how that comes and goes. Yeah. Even statewide, talent can come and go, and sometimes you see a run of major college prospects, and then very few sometimes.
Yeah,
so I guess those are just the cycles.
It is. That's just kind of the cycle of life, I guess.
So after having the career at University Heights, now you're looking at college and college basketball. Tell me about the decision and walking on at UK.
Well, I wasn't really highly recruited. I wasn't a guy that everybody wanted. I was going to go to Transy and play for Coach Brian Lane at Transy. And I just had the opportunity to play in front of Coach Smith, you know, a couple times. I played in front of him. He was going to watch O.J. Mayo when we played them in the state champion, in the state tournament, Class A state tournament. And we played against him. I had a pretty good game that game. And we ended up beating them. And I think I had like 39 and 21 or something like that. It was a good game. And then Brandon Stockton, the Mr. Basketball, was playing next. So he stuck around and watched him play. And then I played his son Brian at Lexington Catholic over the years. I think we played them every year. So he got to see me play him. And I had already had an academic scholarship to the University of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So his familiarity with me just allowed me to walk on. I was like, "Yeah, sure, I'll definitely do it." So, it was God's doing. It definitely wasn't me. It had nothing to do with me.
Well, you know, the players can motivate themselves sometimes by saying, "You never know who's watching," and so you're going against a competition that Tubby Smith or maybe other coaches, when you're being looked at, might be watching another player, but that doesn't mean they're not watching you too. So it's always I know you're an effort guy. I've heard you talk about how you had to give everything you had to succeed on the basketball court, and that's such a lesson, because in this case you had a pretty important pair of eyes watching you in Tubby Smith, and that really changed your life, didn't it?
It really did. It worked out well. You know, sometimes other people's I don't know, fame or clout or you know, hype, acknowledgement can help you out. It definitely helped me out, because if we weren't playing O.J. Mayo, Coach Smith would not have been in the gym that day, you know. So it just worked out for me, and playing hard. My mom always said I would play at Kentucky. I was like, "Mom, I don't think it's going to happen, honey. I'm sorry." But she was right.
Yeah, it happened. And most people who met Tubby Smith, even those of us who are fans or seeing him from afar, he always seemed to be a very down-to-earth person. Mm-hmm. It was like if you met him and you got to know him, that was the real person. Was that your impression?
Yeah. Coach Smith talked too much, man. He's always talking to people too long. We're trying to sit on the bus. We're trying to get out of there. He's still talking, you know. But, Coach Smith was a really, really a great guy, nice human being. He does give you a real genuine answer when you talk to him, and I always appreciated that about Coach.
And at the same time, he was a tough, competitive coach who was going to get the best out of you, too.
Yeah, you don't really appreciate Coach until after you leave him, you know?
Right.
That's kind of how it goes.
Yeah. It seems like when people have the best relationship with their coaches, they say that they got that perspective on the relationship maybe years after they actually left and weren't playing anymore. And that's probably true with a guy like Tubby Smith. But you played on some great UK teams. So you got here. Now you're a walk-on at Kentucky. And I wanted to ask you about the walk-on experience because, again, most of us see the guys on game night and they see the walk-ons usually on the bench. Mm-hmm. They've done not too many minutes for you. But they have a role on the team, of course, but what's it like day to day? Because you're out there working, you're at every practice and working hard just like everybody else is. But what's that experience like day to day?
Man, it's no different, except for, well, back then we weren't allowed to eat training table, which was ridiculous. I always thought that was a weird rule. Mm-hmm. But everything else was the same. So all the workouts, all the everything, weight sessions, the cat's hours that you had to do in study hall, they're all the same. So you are part of the team. And luckily, I just believed in working hard, and I was playing against so many players that were so much better than me. I just had to compete every single day because, mm-hmm. I mean, I came in, my class was Kalena Azubuki, who was scoring 40 from out in Tulsa in high school. Antoine Barber was transferring over from junior college, and he was like junior college All-American and probably should have just gone straight to the NBA, not even come to Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Antoine would probably still be in the NBA right now, honestly. But then I playing against Gerald Fitch and Cliff Hawkins in practice every day, Keith Bogans, were all guys that were bigger, better, faster, stronger than me. And you have no choice but to get better in that situation when you're playing against those guys every day. And I kind of took it as a challenge, just how much better can I get? You know, are these dudes that much better than me? Can I play with these guys? Mm-hmm. And the more I started believing in that, the more I was able to play. It's crazy. Like, belief is a crazy thing. And if you have belief and you learn belief in yourself, it can take you and propel you to levels that, you know, you didn't think you could get to before.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the confidence that you have to have, because if you come in as a walk-on, and as you say, especially when you're first getting started, these guys, they're just better.
Oh, yeah.
They're just better. So you're going to have to accept that a good day for you is not like what a good day in high school was. And I don't mean game action. Yeah. I mean just even in practice, because they're going to take it to you in practice every day, too. How do you maintain that confidence?
Oh, you don't. I was ready to go. I was like, man, I don't belong here. I remember sitting down with Dave Hobbs, who was one of our assistant coaches at the time, who was also a great coach, legendary coach. He actually changed my shot when I got here. He helped me put it over to the side, and he spent, you know, hours with me in the gym just trying to perfect the shot and get it to where I got it to eventually. But he was like, no, man, you're good. You get picked every game. You get picked first game every time, and that's saying something.
And now, when you say you get picked,
playing pickup, you know,
okay,
when you're playing pickup in
the
workouts and stuff. And he, you know, they always watched and towered over and stayed up there and watched us play. But he was right. I was getting picked every game, every mm-hmm. first game I was in. And he's like, that means something. The guys are picking you. That means you can play.
Yeah.
So you need to stick around and ride this thing out and just work. And that's what I did. Mm-hmm. And like I said, he helped me with my shot. It got a lot better. And that's kind of my thing. I became a shooter.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Now, when you accept the walk-on role, what kind of conversation is had there? Because normally, I mean, you ended up, you were an exception as a walk-on, and mm-hmm. you eventually played a very prominent role. But most guys don't,
mm-hmm.
and they have that role in practice to try to make the other guys better. But what's that conversation like when they're telling you about what a walk-on will be like?
Oh, man, it was just, I guess it wasn't even a lot of conversation about it. It's just kind of, you can walk on and, you know, make sure you keep your nose clean, make good grades, and go from there. It wasn't really a thought like you're going to walk on and have a major impact and play major minutes, you know, mm-hmm. by the time it's all said and done. It was more so of a, you can join the team. And and I was cool with that. And honestly, I loved it. My first year, we were phenomenal. I mean, I hardly got to play at all, and that was fine with me because that's the year we won. We'd won 26 in a row.
Yeah,
we were number one overall.
16-0 in the conference.
Yes, yeah, undefeated in the conference, won the SEC tournament. We were rolling. Mm-hmm. We were the best. We were still AP number one overall at the end. And if Keith Bogans doesn't sprain his ankle against Wisconsin, we probably win a national championship. Mm-hmm. And that's it was tough. But we ran into Dwayne Wade and Marquette after that, after he sprained his ankle. And then in the Elite Eight, they beat us. Beat us pretty good, and then they went on to lose by 40 to Kansas the next day. So, yeah, we should have not the next day, but next weekend. But, that was a tough one. But that was my first experience at Kentucky, so it was a phenomenal ride. And then we followed it up the next year with one that was not as impressive, but really, really good again.
Yeah, Tubby had some excellent teams there that didn't get back to the Final Four, but at the same time, those were some great seasons, and they won a lot of ball games against some great competition. Bogans was one of the stars, and you mentioned Gerald Fitch. Chuck Hayes was still here, right?
Eric Daniels, We had that freshman year, Marquise Estill. Mm-hmm. We had a really, really good team. Fun guys, and it just helped me learn a lot about college life, about just understanding how important it was to respect each other, work with each other, and fight for each other. I really learned a lot about that my freshman year. And then my sophomore year is when I actually really started to get to play some minutes that actually mattered. And I started, you know, having an imprint on some basketball games, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the time when things began to turn in your favor with you working toward more minutes and then actually getting some significant minutes. Was there anything in particular? You talked about working on the shot. That's certainly a great way to contribute. Mm-hmm. But what drove that that moving up to the point where you're playing significant minutes?
Yeah, I think every day in practice was a battle. Our practices, especially my freshman year, our practices were amazing because we had so many guys that were vying for minutes and trying to get minutes. And then my sophomore year was the same way. And I got in the North Carolina game. We were struggling at home, and we were playing North Carolina at home. And Coach told me to get in the game, and I was like, oh, man, all right, let's go. So I'm walking up to the bench. I'm walking up to the scores table thinking, man, this is North Carolina, and you're about to play. Like, so I was pumped, and I got in there, and I think I got an offensive rebound or something. I got an and one. So I don't know. I played probably 8 minutes and had three rebounds or something like that, 3 points, something like that. Nothing major, but it was like then where it's like, yo, you did this in North Carolina, in Rupp, made a major contribution. Like, you can do this. You belong here. You can play here. So it kind of helped my confidence, you know, Coach Smith putting me in that situation. And then for the rest, you know, from then on, I was just like, okay, I belong here. I can do it.
So. Yeah, so that was something of a breakthrough then, that one game. That moment of being at the scorer's table and waiting to go in, I guess it's a combination. I mean, you know that you've earned a chance, and you know that, and you believe strongly that you can play with any of these guys that are out there on the floor. But at the same time, there's that one moment of, wow, I'm about to go into the game.
Yeah, you know it is. Yeah. It is. It's definitely, especially that year, it was like, man, this is, because I've checked in, you know, blowouts before, but I hadn't really, I mean, it's Carolina. It's the CBS game on Saturday. You know, everybody in the country is watching that game. Mm-hmm. And you're like, yo, you're about to check into this game. It was a really, really cool moment. And then you get in there and you make a play, and it's just, it's the best thing. And then you just realize, yeah, this is it. I love this. So
you continued really the rest of your career to make significant contributions. I noticed one stat. I think it was your junior year, 9 for 19 from 3-point range for that season, and that's good shooting at any level. Any coach is going to be glad to have a guy if you can make 9 out of 19 on threes.
That's
you'll probably find some playing time, and not that you don't need more than that for your game. They're going to expect you to play on the defensive end too. But that work with David Hobbs sounds like that was a real career changer.
Oh, it really did. It changed everything. Obviously, I needed more shots. Didn't get up enough shots, so we had to talk to Coach Smith about that. But no, man, I I had so many good workouts. Because you track everything, and I'd have workouts where I shot, you know, in the 80% from the field, or I'd shoot, you know, 70% from the three-point land, and it was just those workouts, those confidence, going against those guys every day. Because Gerald Fitch and Cliff Hawkins were the best defensive guards in the country at that time. Like, our backcourt defense was phenomenal. And you go against those guys, you got to figure out ways to create shots. You got to find openings. You got to find angles. So sharpening that, and as strong as Kalina was, as long as Antoine was, like, going against those guys every single day, you had to figure some stuff out. And it's truly iron sharpening iron in the basketball sense of that term, because every day we all got better, and every day we all pushed each other to get better. And that's why we got in the games and it was so much easier. Like, we get in the game and the game would be nothing. That's why we were so successful, especially for those first 2 years. We were unbelievably talented, but we worked so hard, and we made each other work so hard. It was pretty special.
Yeah, going back to the point we talked about earlier, if you're going against Gerald Fitch and Cliff Hawkins in practice every day, there are going to be a lot of days where you don't feel like you did very well, just because they're really good. But at the same time, you're helping make them better, and they're certainly making you better. So it's working. It just seems like that sometimes it would be hard to think about it working when, okay, I can't get the ball off the floor against him, or I can't get the offense started against him. I'm never going to get a shot off, or he's always there. That would have to be the frustration angle. But at the same time, you're always making progress.
Always, yeah. Yeah, you have to be as positive as you can. And it's, at the end of the day, it's a team sport. And we were really, really competitive as a team. I mean, we were number one overall going into the tournament my first 2 years. So my sophomore year, again, we were number one overall. We fell short. We were just banged up. We were not healthy. Cliff's knee, Cliff's back, Gerald's knee, Kalina's knee. We were just kind of the walking wounded that year, and went into the tournament not as healthy as we wanted to be. Mm-hmm. I think if we were more healthy, we could have had a deep run. UAB got us. It was one of those just freak games. But, yeah, still a great year, still a great season. And then we followed up my junior year with another Elite Eight run, and we just fell short to Michigan State. Mm-hmm. But that was Patrick Sparks' double overtime thriller, where he did get fouled. They called the foul. I don't know why he didn't shoot a free throw and we win the game, but it is what it is. Yeah. But, I mean, it just – when you have those runs and you finally get older and you look back, it kind of helps you appreciate – the seasons that you have, and understand, even watching this team this year, the season that they're going to have. Like, their snapshot is 8-4 right now, and they've had some ups and they've had a lot of downs, especially in the major points, but they haven't been healthy. They haven't had their entire team. So it's like, yeah, that was the first part of the story. Let's just wait and watch, and teach us to have a little bit more patience, and not, you know, don't be so quick to say, "Oh, it's over." It's all like, no, let's just relax, guys. It's going to be all right. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, a lot of the fans do this because they're so interested. That's mm-hmm. why they, every game ignites their passion one way or another.
Right.
It can be positive or negative, and when things aren't going well, they can get down on a team. Mm-hmm. And of course, this team did have a very bad loss at Gonzaga. It looked like that night, not only was the margin way out of hand, but sometimes it looked like the effort wasn't there that needed to be either.
Right.
But anyway, fans were down certainly at that point. But you get all the ingredients together, mm-hmm. and now it looks like this team could really accomplish some things.
Man, you have to say this. There's an echo in Lexington, Kentucky. I don't know if it's because Rupp is so big, but there's just a big echo. So anytime anything happens, it echoes so much. So you beat Purdue in the preseason, oh, we are the best team in the country. We're winning a national champ, you know. And then you lose these games, and then, oh, we're not making the tournament. We're the worst team. Pope's got to go. You know, it's like an echo. So everything is just magnified because of how important Kentucky basketball is. And that's what's beautiful about this place, and that's what's horrible about this place all at the same time. It's the best. You pick an adjective, and that's Kentucky basketball. It's phenomenal. It is fanatic. Mm-hmm. It is exhilarating. It's fun. It's heartbreaking. It's all of the above. And that's what makes this place so special.
Yeah, you can go a lot of places where the mood meter doesn't change much, but mm-hmm. then that's going to make it a whole different experience for you as a player. But having this fan base when things are going well, and they're supportive when they're not going well, but they're supportive in a different way, and they're certainly critical when things are not going well. They don't abandon their support. It's just that they show it by being critical of the team or the coach, and especially the coach when things are not going particularly well. And this year they criticized roster construction and had a little problem with roster destruction is what what had happened with the injuries. But now, again, seeing this team and seeing the potential now, especially with the acquaintance apparently back and, and ready to go, there are just a lot of things to be excited about at this point, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this team looks like it that second half of the St. John's games looked really good. And it was important that this team had those bad games because their effort wasn't what it needed. And Kentucky fans are great in that if you're playing your best and you lose, then they can live with it, you know. But if you're not given the effort that's necessary, and it's beautiful because when you put on that jersey, there's so many guys before you that played and knew the effort and knew the standard. And most of these fans have seen that. When you think about the guys, I mean, all the way back to you can go back to Riley. I don't know anything about that, but my memories are, you know, guys like Wayne Turner, Tony Delk, you know, Travis Ford a little bit, and then you get into the Jeff Shepard and Hishimu, all those type of guys, Derek Anderson, Ron Mercer, the 95, 96, 98. You see all those guys. You saw how hard they played. You saw the effort that they gave, and you understand. And then, you know, we had our segment where we came in and we had our runs. We never got to a Final Four, but I mean, we had some pretty good teams that, had, we had, it was enjoyable years, you know what I mean? We didn't have, it wasn't miserable years. Sometimes when the team is like 15 and 14, when those Billy G years, those were tough years. But, you know, you still have guys that understand, even going through that, that had to play, like Joe and Ramel had to go through that. They still knew what was expected of them and what was, what it was supposed to be at Kentucky. And that's what these guys are learning. Yeah, they're coming from different big-time programs. Florida's a big-time program. Alabama's a big-time program, but they're not Kentucky. They're not Kentucky basketball. There's nothing in the SEC like Kentucky basketball. And I just think that they're understanding that and coming to grips with that, and they're starting to give the effort that's necessary.
And again, players, well, teams aren't as young as they used to be at one time. So when you have players coming in who are getting ready to face their first, some of them, first Southeastern Conference season, there are others who now have played for other SEC schools. So you have some veterans in the, in that standpoint. But what do you recall about going through the conference season the first time? And how was that different, or what was it like touring the SEC arenas and playing there for Kentucky?
It's just the intensity that picks up. And I don't know what it is about being in conference, but it's so much harder to blow a team out in your conference. And it's the familiarity of it. It's the nature of all the games. The game slows down when you get into conference. It gets more physical, especially in the SEC. They let a lot go in the SEC physicality-wise. And understanding that and being able to match intensity for 40 minutes. When you get to this point at this level, it's who can sustain their focus, who can sustain their force for 40 minutes. It's not like one team is so much better than the other. It's all about imposing your will on another team and doing what you have to do every single possession, every single defensive possession. You're hitting somebody in the chest on the box out. You're not letting the ball, you're not letting your guy get an offensive rebound. It's just things you can't do. You're not turning the ball over. You're making sure you're setting a good screen. You're getting your guy open. You're making the extra pass. Everything is magnified by 10 when you get into the conference play. And when you're freshman, yes, you can be super talented, but it still takes a minute to understand that and get used to that. So that intensity is something hopefully that this team will be able to understand, knowing that we have, you know, Denzel Aberdeen, who was a national champion. We got Mo, who played in the, who played at Alabama and went to Final Four. You know, we got guys that have been there and done that. So hopefully that leadership and that knowledge and experience can lead down and bleed down to guys like Malachi, who haven't been there, or Jasper, who is not as physical and is going to get banged around a little bit when the SEC play starts. So it's going to be a combination and a mixture, but I mean, Jaden Quaintance is going to help out an awful lot, an awful lot.
He's going to be a weapon, isn't he? Having him on your side is
what
is a big
Christmas
deal.
Present for Coach Pope and then Big Blue Nation, because we saw the impact that he had in the first game back, and it's just his presence and his physicality. Yes, I know physicality was used a million times in that game, but it was a very, very physical game, and that's what St. John's does. But I was really, really impressed by Moe. I thought Ortega actually played a lot more physical in the way that he used to play, and we need to see that. We need him back to last year's old way, where he's being aggressive, going to the basket, and playing as hard as he can defensively, running through those passing lanes like he used to. And he got into more of that. And then having Jalen Lowe back is priceless for this team. We can't run without Jalen Lowe. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. We've got one point guard. He comes off of screens with a certain speed. He can snake a screen and double back and drop off passes. So the way that he plays, the explosiveness and the speed, it puts everybody in their natural position, and it gets us playing at the right pace. We can't play at the proper pace without Jalen.
We talked earlier about you developing your three-point shot, and, of course, the shooter is the last part of that whole process. And so if you have a point guard like a Jalen Lowe, somebody who gets you the ball, they've got to get you the ball in the right position.
Yeah.
I mean, if he doesn't get a good pass, or you have to reach for it, or you're not at the right angle, or he's not at the right angle, everything can go wrong on the shot then. But tell me about the importance of that part of the – when we see a three-point shot, everybody applauds the shot. But tell me about what else leads up to that.
Oh, it's so much that leads up to the shot. And I always say that when you're playing a game, you want to take workout shots. So you want to take rhythm shots that are passes are on time, you're stepping on pace, on target, and everything like that. And I mean, I played with Rajon Rondo. He was my point guard my junior and senior year. Patrick Sparks was an unbelievable passer my junior and senior year. And Ramel, when he didn't shoot it, he would pass it. And he could pass too. So all the work that comes into it, because we ran a lot more sets back then. So we were running plays, we were screening, and the ball had to move from side to side, skip pass, whatever it was, and it did need to be on time and on target. If you have a good point guard, it makes all the difference in the world. Rajon got us out of stuff and out of jams and situations by his ability to get to the basket, by his ability to get into the middle and create, where guys would come off of him having to stop him drive, and he would deliver a perfect pass on time and on target. And when you're able to do that, it's the confidence that you feel as a shooter stepping into the shot, because, again, it's a workout shot that you shot, I don't know, 100 times in the last day. You know what I mean? You shoot so many shots when you're in school. And when it's a rhythm shot like that, you're going to make it. You're going to shoot a high percentage. So our percentages this year have not been great. I think a lot of it because we haven't been taking a lot of rhythm shots. I think Jalen Lowe will allow for that.
You're doing some broadcasting work now. In fact, we're recording the day before the Bellarmine game, which you'll be working. Are you enjoying that?
I love it. Yeah. I absolutely love it. It is it's what I wanted to do like forever. I've always been a big Dickie V fan, so seeing him in Rupp with Charles Barkley last week was really, really cool. But no, it's something that keeps me around the game. I really, really enjoy it. I feel like I have a solid knowledge of the game, what needs to happen, what teams are trying to do, what they want to do, and just describing that for people. And I love it. I absolutely love it.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that, and enjoyed working a high school game with you recently, too. Maybe we'll have that opportunity as well, but we'll certainly look forward to seeing you on a lot of UK broadcasts and maybe some other college basketball in the future as well. It sounds like you really want to apply yourself to it. I know you work hard at it, so it does mean a lot to you, doesn't it?
It really does, and I don't take it lightly. I don't want to go in there and sound like somebody that's uneducated that doesn't know what they're talking about. So, like I said, I'm doing those high school games, trying to perfect my craft and get better, you know, as many reps as I can, just understanding the game and explaining it. I enjoyed our game. I thought we had a great game with Tate Creek and Lafayette the other night. So, again, just being around the game is something that I enjoy. Watching the game is something that I just love to do, and I'm going to do anyway. So I may as well talk about it and see if I can get a little scratch for it as well.
Yeah, that's right. There's nothing wrong with that either.
Yeah.
Going back to your days as a player, and we talked a little bit about the coming in as a freshman and working against all those great players, but then you began to get to a point where you're making some contributions. But that transition between the freshman and sophomore year, it must have been just night and day different when you came in as a sophomore.
Oh, yeah.
You know what the whole experience is about. You know that you're going to face some great players in practice, but you also know that you can get the job done too. But what was that? How would you make that comparison between the freshman and sophomore year?
The confidence is, it's amazing the confidence you gain between your freshman and sophomore year. One, because, I mean, I put on like 15 to 20 pounds of muscle in that year. And that's what you do as a freshman. You bulk up, you eat more, you sleep all the time. And your body learns to deal with what is to come in college sports and college athletics. So the leap from freshman year to sophomore year is enormous, just in that not only do you know what to expect, you can handle what you're going to get. So you know about the workouts. It's not going to crush you anymore. Because when you're a freshman, the first workouts absolutely destroy you. We had Coach Boyd was our strength coach, Tommy Boyd, and goodness gracious, like his goal was to make you throw up if you were a freshman. And he was successful quite a few times.
Pretty good percentage.
Yeah, he was good at what he did when it came to that. But, no, if you worked hard in there, you were going to put on pounds and put on muscle. And once you have that muscle, it just makes the game so much easier. You play through little bumps. You don't get knocked off your line when you're driving. You can deny the ball. You're stronger. You can actually put up a fight in the post if a big guy posts you up. So it's just a different level of self-belief that comes with that strength and with that extra year of school. So from freshman to sophomore year, it was great. And then from sophomore to junior year was really when I was like, okay, now I can really play. And my junior year is when I really started getting major type of minutes and playing, you know, 12 minutes a game, maybe 15 minutes a game if I'm lucky. But I got to really contribute more and making shots. Like I said, Dave Hobbs really changed my shot. So playing with confidence, having that physicality and believing in myself and making shots, it was a reason I got to play.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about the building strength and the conditioning. There's so much of especially a major college sport that goes on when the bright lights are not on, and fans see you on game day, and we love the games, and it's exciting, and that's, and the players love it too. But so much of basketball life really doesn't have much to do with that. It's the hard work behind the scene, and players, you just got to throw yourself into it, don't you?
That's it. I mean, the games are, what, 5% of what you see that actually happens, just because, I mean, not only that, after practice, if you're banged up, you got to go sit in the ice tub. You got to sit in the hot tub. You got to go and, you know, you're there an hour before, you're watching film an hour before practice. You got to get taped up. It's so much time that goes into being at the top of this sport. And if you want to be at the top, then you've got to put in the time. So it is a grind. Now, it would be a lot easier if I was getting a couple million. Maybe I would have grinded a little bit harder too,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But no, man, it's great that these kids are getting paid now. It's kind of crazy what they're getting paid.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's going to have to be some type of regulation eventually. They'll figure something out that works. But, yeah, I sure would have liked to have that kind of money when I was in college.
It was such a dramatic change, wasn't it? Because you talk to guys, and this is probably true in your generation too, but I mean, they had something that at least a generation or two ago they called laundry money, and you would get the guys used to get $10 a month or something, and when you run out on the floor, and it's a thrill to run out on the floor, but when you see all these people in the stands, and they all paid to be there, and you know the game's on television, and the TV people paid to televise it, and there's advertising all over the arena, and those people paid, there's a lot of money turning around there, and a lot of it's on you as a player, and now they are getting paid, and I think most fans have probably come around to the stance that it's good that the players are paid, but as you said, there has to be some sort of regulation long term, because it's hard to see things being able to go on the way that they are now.
It is. I don't know what that looks like. I think that you're going to have to start signing 2-year deals for these players, with an option if their coach leaves, then you have to throw that in there. But I know that there's situations where schools are suing kids for not giving money back that they said that they would, and you know, that's going to be sticky, and however that turns out is how it's going to turn out. But there needs to be some type of guideline or some type of system. I think, you know, either make it like soccer where the team has to buy out the player, like they sign a deal, and if another school wants them, they got to buy him out and be willing to do that and go from there. Or make these players sign 2 or 3 year contracts where they have to stay with the school for a little bit longer, just because – I mean, 4 schools in 4 years is kind of crazy.
It really is. And it seems like, too, that they would have to be, and I'm not sure how this would be structured, but almost an overall collective bargaining agreement like they have in the pros. But then the pros have players' associations with representatives for the players who can agree on behalf of the players. And right now, I guess we don't have anything like that for college players.
We don't. And it's tough because, you know, there's differences. Like, let's say you're a kid at Bellarmine and you have a great year. And then you want to transfer. So you go to West Virginia. So you go to West Virginia. That's a major college. It's a major D1 college now. Okay. In a big tournament. I mean, in a big conference. Well, West Virginia, you had a great year. So now Texas wants you. So do you get to go to Texas? Like, how many times do you make the jump? And do we limit kids on their ability to make the jump? So, I mean, if you start at Kentucky, should you be able to go to, you know, three different places? Or if you start at, like, a major, the major college, should you be able to go? Or, you know, limit? It's just so many different variations and rules. It's just a, it's a tough thing to regulate. So I don't know how they're going to do it, but something's going to have to be done.
Yeah, it really is. It seems like now every answer you explore opens up more questions.
Exactly.
With that, with each one supposed answer. So that, yeah, there'll be a lot of work to do. I don't think we're going to go back to the old days, but
no.
At the same time, I don't know exactly how we're going to go forward either. So right now, we just kind of have to deal with the chaos as basketball observers, don't we?
That's it, man. I do not envy these coaches now at all, because their job is not only to get in guys, but keep the guys that they have too. So it's a tough spot to be in. Tough spot to be in, but hey, it's where we are. So you just got to deal with it and make the best of what you can.
Tell me a little bit about it, if you can, what basketball and your basketball career, especially at UK, has meant to you now throughout your life, because you've been gone for a few years now as far as playing is concerned. Mm-hmm. But how does it fit into your career and your daily life now, having had that experience?
Yeah, listen, I'll be gone. Next year, it'll be 20 years.
Wow.
That is a long time. And it's crazy because people still remember when I played. Mm-hmm. And people still talk about it and still ask me what I think about the Cats and all those things. And that's Kentucky. That's Kentucky basketball. I don't think you get that many other places around the country. And so it's been everything to me. I mean, when I was in school, I was able to go over to Japan and China and play over there for a summer. For 2 weeks out of that summer, lost a lot of weight, but saw some things that I wouldn't otherwise get to see. I mean, I've gotten to go to Hawaii, went to play the Maui Invitational, got to go to Hawaii, hit almost all the states up in the country. So it's just been an amazing, amazing experience at school, and then post school, all the opportunities and just the different people that you interact with and meet as a result of basketball. It's really, really cool. It's really, really, it's fun. It's awesome. It's humbling to be a part of the something that is so special, the tradition that so many people love and lean into and pass down, you know, from generation to generation. And I'm passing it down to my sons now. Mm-hmm. And my six-year-old has to go to bed most of the times when Kentucky's playing. But the first thing he says when he wakes up is, did we win? Did Kentucky win? So it's it's pretty cool, and it's been an awesome experience, a great ride, and it's going to continue to live it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we appreciate you sharing some of that with us today, and thanks very much for doing this.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Okay.
You've been listening to The Sports Page with Keith Elkins, an exclusive podcast from 91.3 WUKY, produced by Alan Lytle. Our theme music is Peanut Butter and Jam by Illogical Bit, available at soundcloud.com/illogicalbit. Subscribe to The Sports Page through Google Play or at our website, wuky.org.